Good morning. Whoever you are, we welcome you. Wherever you have come from, we welcome you. And whomever you love, we welcome you. My name is Elaine Bowen. It is my privilege to serve as the worship coordinator this morning. The service is led by the worship arts team, including our commissioned lay minister, Lori Fatchett McGee, Eric Van Bars, worship associate. We also have the Fallow Time Folk Orchestra, our director of music, Hal Walker, our religious education coordinator, Colleen Taylor. And it truly takes a team and a village to put on service this morning. Little flame, light the tender kindling of our souls, and soon a roaring blaze shall be of warmth and love and community. From this little spark, may a fire of passion spread from heart to heart and light our way, sweet spirit, and light our way.
I'd like to share with you this morning an excerpt from a meditation by Priscilla Murdoch. On this both joyous and solemn day, we have reason to celebrate. We have reason to be grateful. We have reason to be proud. We gather in the shadow of a world unsure of itself, of plans for peace lost in the plague of ambition, of a planet under threat. And yet we have cause to be hopeful. Our forebears have given us an example of perseverance in the face of uncertainties, of hope in the face of difficulties. This church was gathered that they might have a place to come, to be together, to share their hopes and their faith. It is today the church that they envisioned, but with a wider vision and perhaps a wider, if not stronger, hope. The problems of the days of our founders were hazardous, but not overwhelming to a determined people. The problems we are called upon to deal with in these times are indeed difficult, but not beyond our capabilities to deal with. Our hope lies not only in the inner strength that our principles remind us to nurture, but also in the example of those who went before to show us the way. Come. Let us worship together.
Spirit of life and love, spirit of mystery and wonder. We do not know what each day will bring as it dawns, but it is here and it is now. We have come from many singular rooms into this one place of sacred holiness where we gather surrounded by the breath of those near us and with the love that comes in their hearts. We know that we are not alone. We are among a family of choice. We know our family cares, our family loves us. We know that we will always be there for each other in our time of need. May it be always so. Amen, and blessed be.
Perseverance is often measured through the binaries of success and failure. If you succeeded, you persevered. Many of life's failures were simply people who did not realize how close they were to success before they gave up. Successful and influential people throughout history have inspired us to conquer goals, even in the face of the most dismal odds and dim prospects. Before founding an extremely successful company, Henry Ford was previously bankrupted and left penniless 5 times from failed ventures. Harlan Sanders submitted his now world-famous chicken recipe to over 1,000 restaurants before someone bought. The Kansas City Star fired Walt Disney because he lacked imagination and had no good ideas. Years later, the Walt Disney Company acquired the Kansas City Star with their purchase of the parent company, ABC. University of Southern California School of Theater, Film, and Television rejected Steven Spielberg 3 times. He subsequently pursued a directing career without a degree, and I've heard he's done all right. Then there's Abraham Lincoln. He failed at business at the age of 21. He was defeated in a legislative race at age 22. He failed again at another business at age 24. Overcame the death of his lover at age 26, had a nervous breakdown at 27, lost congressional races at 34 and at age 36, lost a senatorial race at age 45, failed to become vice president at age 45, lost another senatorial race when he was 49, and then finally was elected president at age 52. Lincoln, Albert Einstein, Martin Luther King, some of our greatest leaders stand as a testament to the powers of perseverance. But it's not just individuals who persevere and define this. If we look throughout the world in every culture, the ability to persevere shapes the narratives of what we value and who we are. The powers of endurance and commitment illustrate our ability to stand up and take a step forward when others might just sit down. Think of ancestors who've survived against harsh environments and little comfort in order to make a better life for their children. Whether it be third-class steerage on a steamship, or braving harsh winters in a new land, or traveling across the plains in a covered wagon, we honor and learn from those who've reached a destination after withstanding unbearable conditions, long hauls without comfort, and continued setbacks. But is this trait to endure natural, or is it learned behavior passed on by example and practice? If we are genetically hardwired to persevere, then why is it so challenging for so many of us to do so? Survival may be instinctual, but I believe perseverance is learned and a choice. Perseverance is distinct from survival as it assumes a victory or positive outcomes in the end. It's a matter of believing in a better world and finding a way to get there when previous strategies have failed. My own perseverance, admittedly, is less about stamina and more about the powers of trial and error. And hope. I have learned to hope. And that continuous power of hope and faith are at the heart of my persistence. And so when times get tough, my learned behavior and coping mechanism is to sing for comfort and for gratitude and for fortitude. And when I sing, I go to the musical theater god, Stephen Sondheim. Good times and bum times, sometimes I've seen them all, and my dear, I'm still here. Plush velvet sometimes, sometimes just pretzels and beer, and I'm here. I've run the gamut, A to Z, 3 cheers and damn it, c'est la vie. I've got through all of last year, and I'm here. Being here means a lot. Being here means I'm going to fail again, but I'm going to learn a little bit more so I can fail better the next time. I have a quote over my desk a dear friend gave me 20 years ago, and it reads, "Everything will be okay in the end. If it's not okay, it's not the end." We learn perseverance through the lessons life teaches us. Nobel Prize scientist Marie Curie shared these wisdom words that I close with. I was taught the way of progress is neither swift nor easy. I have learned that I'm still here, and this is not the end.
The poem If by Rudyard Kipling was written in 1895, and the language of the poem reflects the thought processes of that time. The language may not reflect how we speak today, but the poem still has meaning. So if you hear words that you think should be changed, just change them in your mind. If you can keep your head when all about you are losing theirs and blaming it on you, if you can trust yourself when all men doubt you, but make allowances for their doubting too, if you can wait and not be tired by waiting, or being lied about, don't deal in lies, or being hated, don't give way to hating. And yet, don't look too good, nor talk too wise. If you can dream and not make dreams your master, if you can think and not make thoughts your aim, if you can meet with triumph and disaster, and treat those two imposters just the same. If you can bear to hear the truth you've spoken, twisted by knaves and fools to make a trap, or watch the things you gave your life to broken, and stoop and build them up with a worn-out tool. If you can make one heap of all your winnings, and risk it on one turn of pitch and toss, and lose and start again at your beginnings, and never breathe a word about your loss. If you can force your heart and nerve and sinew to serve your turn long after they are gone, and so hold on when there is nothing in you except the will which says to them, hold on. If you can talk with crowds and keep your virtue, or walk with kings and not lose the common touch, if neither foes nor loving friends can hurt you, if all men count with you, but none too much, if you can fill the unforgiving minute with 60 seconds worth of distance run, yours is the earth and everything that's in it. And, which is more, you'll be a man, my son.
Although I've lived in Ohio since I was 22 years old, I am a native New Englander. I am a proud native of the Bay State, Massachusetts. New Englanders are known for what my mother would call stick-to-itiveness. The Yankee work ethic was instilled in us at a very early age. The message was very clear. You will achieve your goals if you work hard and never give up. That came back to me time and time and time again. And I will share with you a personal story of parenting my twin sons, Evan and Grant, who at age 5 and a half were diagnosed as being on the autism spectrum. There were many challenges when they were young, especially before we knew what different abilities they would have in life. As with any child, you teach self-care skills. Self-care as in how to get dressed, how to brush your teeth, how to use the bathroom by yourself. The summer that they were 3 and a half, when we were just beginning to to understand that there were differences from other children, it was time to start working, I thought, on self-toileting. They now had some functional language. Until then, they had been vocal, but not verbal. We were at Kent State's School of Speech and Language Pathology and Audiology. They were getting speech therapy and learning how to communicate their needs. So Bill and I undertook the challenge of teaching these children how to self-toilet. Several years later, when they started first developmentally delayed preschool and then in kindergarten, and they went to school, the teachers were absolutely astonished. They shouldn't know how to do that. And I said, oh, I didn't know. There were several years of perseverance in teaching self-toileting skills. One of the big challenges as adolescents approached was interrupting the routine of dressing in the morning to stop and apply antiperspirant before putting on a shirt. That took 1 year of every morning, every day. There were tears, there were shirts that had to be taken off, turned right side out again, antiperspirant applied, put the shirt back on, but eventually we were able to insert a new skill into there. But more than anything else, shoe tying, yes. Well, as you may remember, it is a rather complex task. It requires fine motor skills. It requires planning. It requires clear instruction. No bunny ears for us. That does not work when you have children who take everything literally and they're looking at you like, what rabbit? What bunny ears? We worked and practiced and worked and practiced. Evan was 12 years, 11 months old. He tied his shoes for the first time. In the days before sending out mass emails, in the days before cell phones, I took out the old paper address book and called every family member and every friend I could think of because I was the proudest mother on planet Earth that day. His brother followed 2 months later. Imitation is the most sincere form of flattery. And Grant learned by watching his brother and not wanting to be left behind. They and our work with them is testament to Marie Curie's wisdom words that Eric shared with us, that the way of progress is neither swift nor easy. There is something else the way of progress is not. It is not solitary. It is not solo. Even though we've spoken this morning already of individuals who have persevered, did each really do what he or she accomplished alone? No one truly lives, exists, or is successful in a vacuum. There are so many supporting players. Parents, siblings, other family members, friends, teachers, mentors. We had what I lovingly call Team Bowen all the way through their education and even to this day with teachers, assistants, occupational therapists, speech therapists, a cadre of hundreds who have helped Evan and Grant grow into the 29-year-olds they are now. It does take a village. Back to my New England roots, which I am never far from. and a story of group perseverance. It would be impolitic of me today to use as an example my beloved New England Patriots. You see, New England sports fans are among the most faithful and most loyal in the nation. They live, breathe, eat, and die with their teams, whether it is football, hockey, that would be the Bruins, basketball, the Celtics, or our much beleaguered Boston Red Sox. You see, I was a child in the 60s and a teenager throughout the 70s. And oh, our poor Red Sox. 1967 was a heartbreaker of a year. We lost in the World Series in Game 7 after fighting back from three games down. Led by Hall of Famer Carl Yastrzemski, it was a season called the Impossible Dream, one that was not to be. It happened again in 1975. We lost to the Cincinnati Reds in Game 7 of the World Series, and I cannot even talk to you about 1986. I cannot. It took until the year 2004 for the Sox to win the World Series, their first championship in 81 years. Accomplishment of team perseverance. Take heart, Cleveland Browns fans, take heart. So, how do we as a community, as a team, as a family, connect with the 2004 Red Sox team of Pedro Martinez, Manny Ramirez, the MVP, and Coach Terry Francona? We are a team. We are the 2004 Red Sox, a team whose long-term spiritual coach departed 15 months ago. We're a team whose interim coach wasn't quite the right fit. We are a team with two major goals that we are working toward: construction of a spacious fellowship hall in the acreage to our west, and we are also deep in the midst of a search for our next settled minister. Both are major undertakings, made more complex by undertaking them simultaneously, although that was not the original plan. The process for the construction project underscores Marie Curie's observation that the way of progress is neither swift nor easy. There is another truth about the path of progress that I am certain the building expansion team will wholeheartedly agree with me on. It is not linear. If one looks at a graph on the X and Y axis, you would like and you would hope for progress to be incremental and on a smooth line reaching toward the goal. Life throws us curves. There are ups, there are downs, there are plateaus, there are twists, there are turns, there are things we never expected. There's the fire department, there's wastewater, there's the need for funds, there's this permit, that permit, drawings. It takes many more times the amount of time to make progress. Takes more resources. It takes greater stick-to-itiveness than anticipated. But the team, this team, with its eyes and hearts and souls that are on the end goal, we're very much like New Englanders. We are tenacious, we dig down, we dig deeper, we double down, and we persevere. The 19th century Scottish philosopher, writer, and historian Thomas Carlyle once said, "Permanence, perseverance, and persistence, in spite of all obstacles, discouragements, and impossibilities. It is this that in all things distinguishes the strong soul from the weak." We are strong souls, my friends. We are motivated by the knowledge and the belief that this sacred home of liberal theology needs to continue for our children, our grandchildren, and all future generations. We are standing at this moment on the shoulders and the bedrock of those Unitarian souls who preceded us. We are a loving spirit team united by faith and fueled by a commitment to fulfill our dreams. The end game is within our reach. Our World Series, our Super Bowl. It is within our reach because together we keep on moving forward, never turning back, never turning back. May it be so. Amen and blessed be. Life is not easy for any of us, but what of that? We must have perseverance and, above all, confidence in ourselves. We must believe that we are gifted for something and that this thing must be attained. Marie Curie. Yes, my friends, we are on our way. We are not turning back, and we shall keep on moving forward. May it be so. Amen.